was very loud.
I have to close all the doors because the cats try to get in.
Even
and the cats in the cradle and the silver spoon.
Nope. Even if
I can't make a joke, nope. I'm dying.
sad song, don't want to hear it.
But sad songs say so much.
No, god damn it. I knew you were gonna say that. I heard it in the back of my head. Mother pus bucket.
No, we'll have a good time then.
Alright, are we ready?
Probably not.
Okay.
God, no.
Good, because we never are. Alright.
Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of Superhero Speak.
But I think many of the people that love this character and that love superheroes in general have used these stories as inspiration to say, you know what? I'm going to do something good in the world. I'm going to make a difference like my hero when I was a kid.
That is my fondest memory of it, because when you're doing comic books, you want them to affect people.
Right.
You want people to care. You want to strike emotions. And I knew that that Clone Saga was striking a lot of emotions.
Can you imagine Pulp Fiction starring Goofy and Mickey Mouse?
I can totally imagine that.
I'm sure somebody's written that one. Quarter pounder
with cheese in France, Mickey? What? Boy, ale with cheese, Mickey. Yeah. I could totally
see.
I would watch the hell out of that movie.
Yes, I gladly sacrifice that my progeny to you, almighty Marvel beast.
But Neil Adams is somewhere going, it's my time.
How do you measure success?
Hey, everyone. You are listening to the one and only Superhero Speak. I'm your host, Dave.
Stick it up your ass.
John's back.
How could you tell?
My ass feels fine.
There is only one response to that, is there?
God.
I mean, I don't know what else to say to that.
It depends.
Maybe yes, please.
No.
Maybe.
All right.
How are you doing, John?
Just dandy.
Ah, good, good. You missed last week, but you're back, and I'm sure you're ready to go.
Well, I heard somebody mention My Little Pony, so here I am.
We'll get to that. We will get to that soon. So, you know anything exciting while you had a week off? Anything you care to share with the class?
No.
Like sands to the hourglass. Days of our lives.
You know, I actually played D&D with somebody from Days of Our Lives once.
Really?
His name was Chris McKenna. It was back in the 90s, and I didn't know that he was, he was a member of it until he brought a $6,000 laptop with him to the game once.
Chris McKenna. My mom watched in the 90s, so I probably know who this person is.
Yeah.
I have to look up. By the way, I'm JD, in case you're new to the show.
Yes, that's right. We never said your name. Everyone should know by now, you're the one and only JD. So John, I guess nothing to share.
Nope. Absolutely not.
Wow.
I didn't go see the Harley movie yet.
A lot of people didn't.
You're not alone. I was planning on it, but I just wrestling.
I was planning on it too, but you know, depression and all. I had things to do and places to not go.
Is wrestling season like rabbit season?
Oh, jeez.
You know, I got nothing, and I'm disappointed in myself.
Oh.
I know. I'm like, really, like, I got nothing.
Oh, you should be.
Well,
looking up who Chris McKenna was on Days of Our Lives. I mean, I'm struggling.
Well, speaking rascally wrestling season, did you do anything exciting this week, John? JD, what's new with you?
No.
We had our regional championship tournament. We won for the second year in a row. We're sending 13 of 14 kids to the next tournament, which is our sectional.
Wow.
Yeah, so we're good. We're doing very well. Very happy right now.
Any new books being worked on or coming out?
I've got a box set coming out in 2 weeks. It's going to take my first 3 books, combine them into 1 book. And you'll get that for a discounted price. It'll bait you into continuing to read on the series. The Books of Jericho, Volume 1, coming soon.
Nice.
That counts as a book. That counts as a book, by the way. Like I say, I'm going to write all these books for the year. This one counts.
There you go, though. There's the link. He was on, what was it, One Life to Live.
Oh, okay, I didn't watch
it. And then he switched to The Young and the Restless when he got older. So.
But he did not do Days of Our Lives.
No, I was wrong. I forgot. It was a long time ago.
That's fine. That's cool. I only watched the one soap.
I'm sure he left the show when his alien secret love child clone took him out. I don't know.
soap operas. They're wonderful.
Yeah, well, apparently they paid really freaking well, too. I mean, he was a kid actor at the time, and holy moly, did he make a lot of money.
Well, you think about it, man. You get everyday work for an actor. Like, if you're young and you're on a soap opera, that's 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year.
He wasn't, this was Connecticut. I was running a youth group at the time, and we were playing D&D in the youth group at a library here. And sometimes at his parents' house. And, basically, you know, he wasn't there the whole week. He was like being tutored and on set the whole week. And then on the weekend, he'd go back home to Connecticut.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing too. If you're a kid and even if you're making scale working full time, you know, that's a lot of money that you can apparently spend on $6,000 laptops.
SAG and BAFTA take very, very good care of their people.
Yeah.
What the hell are we doing today?
Well, I think we're doing a podcast. But apparently we're talking about soap opera actors.
Talking about soap operas and Dungeons and Dragons. Well, Dungeons and Dragons thing happens from time to time. But...
Yes. So I didn't do anything really exciting. I got sick this week. So there's that.
Congratulations.
So I missed a couple days at the gym. So I only went 2 days last week. And then and not my normal days. I went on a Saturday, which wasn't bad.
I'm sure the people at the gym are happy you didn't spread norovirus to them.
You sound like my daughter. She kept saying, well, if you're feeling sick, don't go because you're going to make other people sick and that's terrible. And then I didn't get up early this morning, so I decided to go after work today, and I will never do that again because apparently that's when everyone goes to the gym. Yeah. It's at 5 o'clock and it's like, yeah, no.
Having to wait to go to the gym.
Yeah, having to wait for machines really sucks. So, lesson learned. Just keep back to my morning routine. But yeah, no, it's, but I'm sticking to it.
Good for you.
I'm going to hit my goal and then I'll be able to beat up John. And that's all that really matters. I mean,
great.
I missed the gym this morning too because I couldn't fall asleep till 1 a.m. So 5 a.m. wake up didn't seem like a good idea. I was stressing out. My birthday is tomorrow.
Oh, well, happy early birthday. Well,
thanks.
It'll be after your birthday when this airs, but, do you care to tell the number?
40.
Oh, the big 4-0.
No, I'm not young anymore.
Dude. Child. Tell how you are old.
Does your wife got anything special planned?
No, not at all. Oh. I gotta pick my dad up. He's been in a physical therapy rehab center for the last month tomorrow. I'm gonna get the oil changed in the car, and then I'm gonna go to practice.
Didn't you hear him, Dave? He's old. You don't have two things on your birthday when you're old.
We have kids or kid, so yeah. No. Andy stressed, he told mom that I needed to have a Godzilla cake.
Oh, there you go.
That's cool. I'm gonna have a gluten free Godzilla cake.
Well, that's good.
I am actually very excited about it.
Well, on my 40th, I had a big party, and I was actually bored the same year the Dungeons and Dragons first came out. So it was kind of a Dungeons and Dragons themed birthday party. So that was kind of cool. We had a dragon themed cake.
Keep circling back to Dungeons and Dragons
time. I know. That's why I brought it up, because you brought up your birthday, so I figured, you know, John would be interested in that.
Truly, yes. I missed the gym too, but only because the building isn't located on the highway that I'd have to drive through it on my way to work.
So. Drive through gyms would be a great idea. Like, you just go right through and you get that workout in without having to leave your car. I don't know how it works, but it could.
You'd need Flintstone cars to do that.
You could do that.
Well, then you wouldn't need the gym because anywhere you go, it'd be a workout.
The gym would be the car.
Hmm. Oh, I think it's a $1 million idea.
Might be hard to keep speed, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Uphill would be cool.
Though there'd be less fatal accidents if everyone's going slow.
True.
All right. Let's make it so.
You beat the hell out of this one.
Yeah.
All right. So speaking of beating the hell out of things, let's do a little social media madness.
Oh, good.
So real quick, we had talked about this. I don't know why this came back up again, but the U.S. agent, the first look, and a couple people responded on that this week. The first one being Sharky Dog, the sharkiest of dogs, said Muck Farvel. I guess that means they didn't like the look of the U.S. agent.
Between his Twitter handle and his tweet, I felt like I was having a stroke for a moment.
Well, you are 40.
So. That's what I'm saying. It's old age. It's like, I heard, buck, 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 buck. I'm like, oh, it's over.
It doesn't get any better, dude. It just doesn't get any better.
Sure it does. Eventually you retire. Billy Cripps said, name brand on the left, great value brand on the right. So, cause it was the cartoon, I mean, a comic drawing, the image in the tweet is a comic drawing and then the picture. I don't know. I think it's definitely an interpretation from the comics. It looks like the Captain America costume with alterations, which is, makes sense for the MCU in my opinion. So here's, this is real reason why I brought this one up, because, I said hi, said John Walker never had a pistol on his hip. Bucky Cap did, plus a knife. He was awesome. So this is true, right?
It was like that's a haiku.
The first time we saw Captain America with a gun in the comic books is when Bucky took over. However, they've already shown Cap with a gun in the movies, so it still fits within the MCU. Am I wrong?
Cap carried a gun in World War II.
Yeah.
In the comics?
Mm.
Okay.
In the original books, Cap wasn't afraid to get his hands dirty, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean,
back then, superheroes were murdering bastards.
I mean, they were. It happened frequently. Superman was tossing people off the buildings. Batman shot fools.
That's funny. Only a week ago, I read an article where they were talking, it was like a meme on Facebook where they were showing one of the people that we know showed a meme where Superman had taken a bunch of drug dealers and just made an asphalt sandwich with them. Like, just completely yes. obliterated.
And it was an ad for Hostess Cakes.
Yes, yes.
And Marvel Universe Online said he could have been bigger. And I don't know. I think they've kind of proven they don't need super big guys to play superheroes anymore. It's not about, you know, big guys. As long as they're fit, it's believable.
Well, I mean, you could also go all the whole way. What is that one famous picture? Who was the artist who did the one with Captain America with the chest that came out to like...
Rob Liefeld
in the Captain America Liefeld? Titties.
Okay. Yeah.
He got the cap titties in that one.
Yes. And then finally, Timothy Jones, our good friend, said, I like the new wave Armani look and the CD slots on the chest.
He wins.
Tim, you win the internet for this week.
Everyone go read Sour Grapes.
Yes, everyone go check it out right now. then we had talked about, of course, the Crow reboot, which is what delved into this week's poll. But some of the responses we got about the Crow reboot were 8-Bit Ray from the Gorilla Brain podcast said, chill it with fire.
I agree.
And the not the popular opinion podcast said, short answer, no. Long answer, still no. If they can't commit to the material, if they try to glam it up, cool it up, or sanitize it in any way, they shouldn't effing bother. This piece is all raw emotion and violent art. It's all pain and anguish. Either do it right or F off. Which, I mean, yeah, if you've ever read the books, it is, you know,
yeah,
very
it's
emotional.
It's disturbing. It's unnerving and just really, really dark.
So that tweet absolutely fits it.
Yes.
And ironically enough, I believe that is the popular opinion when it comes to a Crow remake.
Yeah.
Let's remake it. Just make the entire soundtrack dubstep.
Dubstep is so 2013, John.
So, Random Randy.
That's what I'm saying.
Rick and Randy Savage from Cult 45 said, okay, here's how I want a Crow movie. A group of white supremacist types kill an interracial couple. The guy who is black dies. The girl is raped and left for dead. Returns. Black dress flowing in the southern breeze?
I think that's southern.
Southern breeze with a sickle. Taking revenge on these fine Americans. Or not. So, okay, Randy, that was really dark. That's odd for you.
Apparently you have some pent-up emotion there.
And so he wants to take a more realistic approach, I guess, where the girl's taking the revenge. But yeah, it sounds like you got some pent-up rage there, Randy.
Southern breeze. Yeah. You're fine. You should listen to that, man.
Considering the stuff that's going on these days, that does have the uncomfortable part of it down. I mean,
so what he just pitched would actually work. That being said, I don't want to watch it. It's very dark.
Yeah, I think
I don't know.
The problem these days, though, that it, like with what we're going through, like politically and everything else that's going on, like people are trending more towards that. Maybe that's DC's problem. We're looking for heroes that actually are heroes and actually like win because we're looking for something uplifting.
That's what we have Marvel for,
right?
Yeah.
So am I the only person that's watched Watchmen, the Watchmen show?
Yeah. I completely forgot about it. I could have used that this weekend.
Maybe not. It's very much like that. What my man here just pitched is very much in that. It's very much that. Like Watchmen is very much about the evils of white. This version of Watchmen is very much about the evils of white supremacy.
And they're not going to make another season, right?
So, no, yeah. Damon Lindelof's out, so they're doing one season. It's very British. I dig it. Let's do one. Get out.
Did it end badly?
I don't know. I'm not. I heard it ended great. I'm not there yet. I'm only on episode 6. I got 3 more to go.
And then Sin Explorers have the only altering opinion on this. It is, if it means we get a remastered Blu-ray of the original, then I'm all for it.
That's a way to find positivity.
Always look at the bright side of life.
Or death. I mean, yeah. All right. But when we talked about that last week, it did spawn our question for the audience this week, which was, of these franchises, who do you think deserves a reboot? The final four that I picked was Highlander, Back to the Future, Iron Eagle, and They Live. Because you guys seemed excited at least about Iron Eagle and Highlander.
I suggested They Live, and that's
We actually got a lot of votes on this one, more than last week's. And in order of lowest to highest, sorry Joey from So Wizard, Iron Eagle only got 12.2%.
Because no one cares about Iron Eagle.
I don't
even know what Iron Eagle is.
Poor man's Top Gun
from the 80s.
I thought it was like, what was it, Airwolf or something?
No, you're thinking of Iron Eagle. Airwolf was the show with the helicopter.
Right. So I don't, I don't know.
It's a kid basically steals a jet to go rescue his father.
But
they actually made like 4 or 5 of them. A lot of them ended up being direct to video. But anyway, next at 15.4% is They Live. At 17.6% is Back to the Future.
There's a cold, dark place in hell for those people who voted for that.
Yeah, you can't remake those. There's no way.
And at a whopping 54.8%, the clear winner, of course, is Highlander.
We're the princes of the universe. Hell yeah. I'm going to sing this episode.
Apparently. JD sings the blues.
So JD sings Queen.
And some of the comments we got, of course, starting off with Randy Savage. I really love Back to the Future, but I would rather it be never be touched again.
Yes. There you go.
The Gorilla Brain podcast, Iron Eagle, but my personal pick would be Logan's Run.
That's actually not a bad idea.
Yeah, I actually just tried to watch Logan's Run, a couple weeks ago, and it's tough to watch.
It's terrible, but it's an interesting idea.
Yes, it's a good concept, but yeah, for the time it was, I guess for the time it was a good, it's a very 70s sci-fi movie. It's the best way.
Pretty much.
Yeah, so it could definitely go for a week. the Ucho Duo Parlay Hour podcast said Highlander. Okay. Christopher, the Irish on fire, at the Irish on fire. I could see a spinoff or a soft reboot with Back to the Future is canon, but Highlander wins.
Hmm.
So yeah, I guess like with what they're doing with Ghostbusters, like that might work where, you know, they find the DeLorean in the, you know, in modern time.
But it was destroyed. We watched it get destroyed.
He rebuilds it, though.
Yeah. Oh, okay. They find the train. They find the train.
Yeah. That's still... You know what? I wish I had thought of this before. I would have added Stargate to this.
Oh, you know, that's... There's so much TV of it, though. But I agree with you. I think Stargate could have been a better movie and could be a better movie still. Yeah, I'm with you.
Well, not just the movie. I mean, there was the entire, you know, Stargate SG-1, mm-hmm. Stargate Atlantis, and then the other one that nobody watched. So, they could, the mythology that they built up over like 20 years, and the movies were amazing. They could really go to town with that. I mean, there's plenty of material to work with there.
Yeah.
Not wrong.
Podcast by Gang Ally Productions said Iron Eagle with how do you say that name?
Marshala
Ali as Chappie Sinclair. John has no idea who that is because he's never seen the Iron Eagle movies.
Lou Gossett Jr.
Yes. And then arguing with myself replied to them with a gif of the kid going Chappie. But no spoilers because John's gonna watch Iron Eagle this weekend. Shake and Not Nerd said Back to the Future could be cool, but could also be crap.
Yes.
Gerald Mansfield at Comics Crossing said, is They Live a franchise?
No.
No, it's a single movie. I just used the word franchise in the question. I'm sorry. I choose Highlander, but only because I never found the original very interesting. Perhaps a reboot could interest me.
It's funny, on Social Media Madness, I always come across people I never want to meet in real life.
Keith Bouncy Law Larson said, none. Let's see Sleeping Dogs Lie and come up with something new and refresh.
Yeah, right.
Which I reply to, we agree, but Hollywood's gonna Hollywood.
Good response.
Warehouse 9? None, let it be, of course. Maxi Lopez said, please don't mess with Highlander. They could have finished it after the first one because it's pretty bloody perfect.
He's not wrong, but they already ripped that bandaid off.
Yes, especially when they started the show. Padden Thane said, vote at Iron Eagle because, please God, do not try to reboot Back to the Future.
He's right.
Yep. The First Run said, not really a franchise, but none of these choices are more relevant right now than They Live.
This man wins the internet.
No, no, no. No, Tim won it already. It's too late. Yeah.
He wins the second. Fine, he can win Google.
He wins Google, okay. Neil.
Google's another internet, I guess.
Sure. At NeilKid75 said, I don't know if it needs a reboot, but it might be interesting to see They Live updated to be a commentary on today's society.
Which would be a reboot.
Yes.
By definition. But he's right.
And Snack Master Inc. said, wait, isn't there only one They Live? Not sure I'd call that a franchise so much as a brand. Again, people, if you listen to the show, we talked about those movies, and it's just hard to say, you know, franchise or movie. So yeah.
But if you want to go both, do V.
V would be cool. They did V like 10 years ago, but it wasn't as good. Yeah.
Yeah.
V was my jam when I was a little kid. Like, I didn't see the original, I was too young, but like WGN in Chicago played the both miniseries every summer. Like for 1 week, they'd knock out V at like midnight, so you had to stay up real late to watch it. Man, I loved it.
They just need a lighter touch with the super kid at the end.
Huh. All right. So. That is Social Media Madness for the week, guys. And I hope you all enjoyed it. And if you would like to know more, well, here's Dave to tell you where you can find more about social media.
Are you enjoying the show? Do you want to be part of our Social Media Madness? Well, then make sure you're following Superhero Speak. Go to superheroespeak.com, and you can find all our social media links at the top of the page. And don't forget to check the page often, because we are posting comic book reviews every day, plus comic book news, movie news, and you can even find old episodes of the podcast while you're there. And when you go follow us on Twitter, at Superhero Speak, also don't forget to follow the Geek World All-Stars Podcast Network. You can find them at stars_geek. Those podcasts are the Pop Prism Power Podcast, Cult 45, So Wizard, Fans on Patrol, Gorilla Brain Podcast, and yours truly, Superhero Speak. Also, search for the hashtag GW All-Stars while you're on there. You won't be disappointed.
Did you pre-record something?
Yes.
Oh, because you threw it to yourself and I was way confused.
All right. So now you guys know where you can find more Superhero Speak. And don't forget to check out the Geek World All-Stars. And on that note, we'll take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
All right. So here we go. Here is some news. Of course, the really big news this week is Sam Raimi is in talks to direct Doctor Strange 2.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Really? I think this is awesome.
I mean, no, it's Sam Raimi. I get it. But, you know, his movies have a certain type of, a certain feel to them. And I don't know if I can divest myself of what he did with the first Spider-Man trilogy and, you know, Xena and Hercules compared to.
Yeah, but he's also the same guy that made, like, he made For the Love of the Game. He made A Simple Plan. Like, he can do different things.
Right. I know. But when he gets into this genre, he does tend to go certain ways.
I don't think that's as much of an issue because, I think at this point, again, we've talked about this many times on the show, Kevin Feige has such a tight rein on these movies.
True.
He's not gonna let Sam Raimi delve too much away, which is interesting, right? Because, let's go back in time to the original Spider-Man franchise that he directed. I still say Spider-Man 2 is possibly the best Spider-Man movie of all.
Argument could be made.
Yeah.
It's a good movie.
If the last two didn't exist, Homecoming and Far From Home.
But the issue is it fell apart because Sony got really involved with Spider-Man 3 and pushed for him to add Venom. He didn't want to use Venom. And I think that's why it fell apart. And he parted ways because of creative differences, because they were trying to control too much. And of course, Scott Derrickson walked away from this movie because of creative differences with Kevin Feige and Marvel and not wanting to match his vision for the movie. So it's an interesting kind of full circle thing when you think about it. I don't know. I'm kind of curious. But I have another question. Could they be asking him to direct, and this is just a crazy idea, since this is a movie about a multiverse, could they be asking him to direct to attract actors from another set of movies he did to come back and do a cameo?
I don't know if that's the main reason why. I think that might be some, like, garnish on the set, on your burger.
Yeah.
I think you want the guy who directed the Evil Dead movies to direct this Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Like, isn't the guy who made the Evil Dead trilogy, like, the perfect person for it? Like, when you think about it like that, I love the way it lines up. I also the fact that we're going to get a Bruce Campbell cameo in some way.
Wouldn't it be fun if there was a contract where Sony said that they had to have Venom in this movie?
It would be funny.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, there are connections there, right? I mean, Spider-Man's not going to be in this one, right? I don't remember hearing about that, but
who knows? Probably not. Maybe so.
See, I think they would be missing an opportunity because who is, you know, most known for multiverse traveling, you know?
Mm.
I mean, they did a Spider-Verse cartoon movie that did really well.
True that.
So.
And the movie did really well. And
that's what I just said.
Yeah.
A cartoon movie that did really well.
Well, there's also a cartoon series.
Yeah.
That featured, like, Madam Web. and a whole bunch of different Spider-Men, so.
Oh, yeah, the 90s one.
Oh, yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, the way they got weird at the end.
Well, they always do.
That's when Mary Jane, like, she melted or something like that?
Oh, yeah, that's right. She got killed in one of the realities at the end.
Yeah, when he has to go looking for her through the multiverse or some stuff.
Right.
It did get a little ridiculous now that I say this stuff out loud.
And he meets Stan Lee at the end.
Yeah.
Yes. So along the news of him being in talks to do this, Scott Derrickson himself, who walked away from the movie, has thrown his hat in the ring to support the choice of Sam Raimi. He tweeted out, "I've worked with Sam Raimi, one of the nicest people I've known in the film business, and as a director, a true living legend. What a great choice to take over Doctor Strange." So, you know, I mean, it's funny because a lot of times you hear these, they're in negotiation things, and they don't pan out. But I think this is one a lot of people want.
Okay. I'll go see it. If he directs it, I'll go see it. I mean, it's better than most.
Right.
Better chance than most that it'll be good.
And then
I'm kind of sorry that the other guy got canned. But,
I don't know if it's so much canned as he walked away again because it's creative. Well, yeah,
I know, but doesn't it worry you that like Feige seems to rub a whole bunch of people the wrong way?
Oh, because he's done a good job. If his movies sucked, it wouldn't bother me. But they're all pretty good, and he's the showrunner. So you know, you want to play with his toys, you gotta play the games he wants.
Yeah.
Or find the Kraggle.
I'm sorry, did you ask me to go find a Fraggle?
No, the Kraggle. If somebody wants to play with his toys, it just, the Lego movie popped up in my head.
Oh, okay. Yes, I recall that now.
That was a three-hop shift, so, you know.
I took it a fourth by immediately peg going to Fraggle Rock in my head.
Well, that was your first.
Just, you know, make sure you have a piece of resistance.
Yes.
So the other thing that came out when they talked about, Sam Raimi being in negotiations to take over the franchise, that people kind of glossed over, but I think it's important to talk about a little bit. Rachel McAdams will not be returning, in her role as Christine Palmer. So, do we think this is gonna affect the movie at all? Do we even care?
I don't want to say I don't care, but I think they kind of wrote her off at the end of the last one. And she isn't, I don't want to say necessary, but I hate the fact that a lot of the Marvel movies, women are only in there as love interest characters.
Yeah.
And so it makes them, by definition, disposable.
True.
So I don't want to say I'm okay with it, but at the same time, if that's all you had in mind for her, okay.
Right, and that's my thing, too. She is just the love interest, and I don't think of Doctor Strange as having a big love interest, you know? But again, I've also read most, like, a lot of teen books he's been in and side stories, you know? I only have a few Doctor Strange proper books in my collection. So, I've never thought of him, you know, being a romantic guy. So it's not, like, to me, it's not a big deal.
No, especially if she doesn't want to be in the movie. You know, if she's good walking away, we should be good with her walking away. And we don't need a ham-fisted Doctor Strange love interest when he should be going absolutely crazy falling through the multiverse. Right. Evil Scarlet Witch.
Right. Because that's one of the things, too, is when they try to, like, shoehorn these love stories into the comic book movies, sometimes it feels like it slows them down.
Yeah, no, it absolutely does. It takes oxygen away from the really interesting plot.
Right. You know, I mean, look at Thor Ragnarok. You know, they were broken up in that movie and no one cared.
Right. And it worked because you got to use a female character as something more than a love interest.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. All right. So no one cares. No love interest. Move on.
I just want crazy Scarlet Witch. That's all I want.
I think we're going to get that.
I know. That's all I asked for. I'm a simple man to make happy.
However, speaking of love interests, John Krasinski has an interest and a love to play Mr. Fantastic in the Fantastic Four reboot.
I think this is awesome.
In a interview, John Krasinski said, are you guys okay? I hear banging.
Oh, I think the three-year-old's having a temper tantrum, doesn't want to go to bed. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
I'm putting together something from IKEA, so.
Okay.
Yes, Krasinski anyway, and his wife.
Yeah, I think Krasinski was asked if he had an interest, and he said, do you have any interest in not shattering people's dreams? Krasinski says with a grin, I would love to be the Marvel Universe. I love those movies because they're fun, but also I think they're really well done. And certainly a lot of my friends are in those movies. I have no idea what Marvel are thinking, but I think they're considering me for Mr. Fantastic. Continue to consider me because I would love it.
And Emily Blunt as the Invisible Woman would be perfect.
And they're an actual married couple who have actually shown they can do stuff together.
You mean actual chemistry between Mr. Fantastic and the Invisible Woman?
It'd be crazy. The Invisible, like, their character, for some reason, the Fantastic Four is such a hard concept for people to, like, latch onto, like Hollywood people. I think having John Krasinski and his wife involved, like, even as filmmakers, to be quite honest, would just be a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
Oh, he did say in the interview that he wouldn't be interested in directing a Marvel movie, but he would love to star in one. So, yeah.
Fine with that all the same.
I mean, it'd still add a lot of, I mean, there'd be some heft to it, to their performance. And there'd actually be chemistry. It'd be nice.
And she's really good, too. Like, he's really likable, but she's really talented. So I think that there could be a cool little balance between them. Because I don't think anyone's ever, I think even in comics, it's hard for people to kind of get the tone of the Invisible Woman quite right.
Yeah.
So I think Emily Blunt would do a great job with it.
Well, the thing is, she could do bubbly and serious.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the first series of movies was all bubbly, and the second failed attempt, the Fan Four Stick, was all serious. It'd be nice to see somebody who could, like, have more than one emotion.
Yeah, I'm with you. I just want to, the tone is tricky, and I still say they should just be adventurers who stumble upon the Marvel Universe.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's my thought. But, I mean, whatever they do, I'm cool with. If they can make this happen, I'm all about it.
I think in some ways, it should feel like the original Lost in Space TV show.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of the inspiration. Like, they were drawn from the same type of inspiration when they created the Fantastic Four. It's that Jack Kirby, you know, Challenge of the Unknown, you know, Fantastic Voyage, that type of feel.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
And,
Hey, Feige, I know you're listening.
Yeah.
Do us a favor.
Watch the original series, and get back to us. So, speaking of things we love and we can't wait for, they have officially told us when to expect the Disney Plus shows in 2020 that we're all waiting for. So, Marvel's The Falcon and Winter Soldier will premiere in August of this year. WandaVision will debut in December. And The Mandalorian, season two will be, where is it? I know it was in this article.
I am not seeing it.
Huh.
They said October.
October. That's it. There you go. That will be.
Wow, that's fast.
That is fast. For a whole second season?
In up to October of 2020?
Yep.
So it's going to be on before WandaVision?
Yes.
Huh.
And then, of course, no date for Loki. That's supposed to be 2021.
Huh. Is the Kenobi series official, or did I just dream that?
It was official, and then they haven't said anything. Like, or, I don't know. I know we didn't get it off of We Got This Covered.
Eh.
So, but I'm not sure. Like, yeah, I don't know. Because I know that, What's-His-Face said that he was in talks to do it.
Ewan McGregor,
right. So, who knows? Hopefully they'll do it. I mean, they could tie it into The Mandalorian.
For sure. You can do whatever they want.
Yeah. I don't know. All right. Now let's cross the aisle. Let's talk about a little bit of DC news here. The first one being the other big news, of course, from this weekend. The Oscars happened. Did either of you watch the Oscars?
Nope.
No.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I don't know anyone who watches them anymore, to be honest. It's, you know, again, it's Hollywood patting themselves on the back and nominating and giving awards to movies people don't watch.
And it's so long.
It is long.
With one exception this year, and we need to discuss if this is a good thing or a bad thing. Joaquin Phoenix won Best Actor, for his portrayal of Joker in the movie of the same name. So, like, now, everyone loved that movie. Did you watch it yet, JD?
No.
But is it going to send the wrong message about the kinds of movies they should be making for comic books?
I don't know. Heath Ledger, one that was playing the same character a decade ago. Like, I don't
know. But it just goes to show you, it's always the villains that are the more interesting characters.
Because they let them be the interesting.
True.
I think that's more true in DC than it is with Marvel.
That's true. I agree with that.
They make the villains the more interesting characters in DC. Because again, we've talked about this before, where it's the DC are the gods among men, and Marvel's more regular people who get powers.
Feet of clay heroes. Yes. Yeah.
So of course, right. Like the indestructible alien, the billionaire who lost his parents, like they're, you know,
Batman is not relatable.
No.
It's easier to relate to Superman than it is to Batman.
And Superman's really not that relatable.
He's an alien.
Yes. Exactly.
He's an alien that grew up on a farm in Kansas.
Who can lift a tractor over?
Oh, who can't? Oh, that's right. You turned 40.
Not yet, motherfucker.
Oh my god.
And you're always going to be older than me.
So. Yep.
Anyway,
that's
wow. but also, like, again, it's, you know, there was an argument about Heath Ledger, getting it just because he died. And, you know, I don't know how true that is or not, because a lot of people love the movie, me included.
I thought he deserved it. I mean,
I agree. I thought he was great.
Yeah. But again, so we get, this is an R-rated comic book movie that's really not a comic book movie, you know? Like, people get mad at me when I say that, but it's not. It's King of Comedy just done with Joker.
It's a ripoff is what it really is.
So it's like, you know, they get all these accolades for this, and it sends this message to Warner Brothers, like, let's make all our superhero movies rated R and, about the villains.
Well, Devil's Advocate.
Okay.
Could they be any worse than they are?
No. No, they cannot.
They've made three, like, in their mainstream, we'll call them movies, they've made how many good ones? Two?
Two, right? If you're talking Shazam and Wonder Woman, then yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was talking. I think Aquaman is okay. Like, it was mildly amusing.
Yeah.
Like, the Superman and Batman movies were trash. Justice League was trash.
Yeah, well, you know? What you're getting at is, if they're not going to make good comic book movies, they might as well make art.
Yeah.
That's actually a cogent argument. All right. Huh. 2 points for Gryffindor.
Saying that most of your arguments are not.
No. I got that.
Just making sure you knew.
No.
That was for you, JD, because you're Gryffindor. John's Hufflepuff.
Hey. I was at least Ravenclaw.
That's okay. I'm Slytherin. I don't know. You gotta watch it, JD. You really need to see it.
Yeah, I probably do.
It would be interesting. It really would be interesting to hear what your point of view is on it. Cause, you know, you're closer to that, to, you know, movie sets and all that. And you'd be able to give us not only that. Yours would be a really interesting point of view.
Not only that, like, you were the most excited about the movie.
I know, until the movie came out. Well, the closer we got to it, the less interested I got.
Yeah, that's true.
Like,
but at first,
when we got closer to what the vibe of the movie was gonna be, you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Me.
You. Anyway.
So.
yeah, I don't know, I don't want to see it.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of movies that no one, saw, and that are comic book movies and they're rated R, Birds of Prey came out this weekend, guys. Worst opening weekend since Jonah Hex for DC.
Yikes.
$33 million it made this
time. And yet, in Rotten Tomatoes, it's got a tomato meter score of 80% and an audience score of 81%.
Yes. So, like, what's the deal? Like,
I have a couple theories.
Okay.
Suicide Squad was so bad that nobody wanted to give this movie a chance.
Taint. Taint is a good reason.
And the people that did want to see it enjoyed it.
Okay. But then there could also be the argument that the audience score of 81 is only by the diehard fans who enjoy the DC movies. They are the ones who wanted to see it. And maybe that score will go down as more people see it?
I disagree. I think the diehard DC fans didn't want this movie.
Huh.
Speaking as a DC person, I did not want this movie. Plus, there's the fact that, you know, it says Birds of Prey and Harley Quinn. And from everything I've heard, the Birds of Prey are only in, like, the last quarter.
Well, it's definitely a Harley Quinn movie.
Yeah, I mean, but still, like, you know, and their portrayals of the Birds of Prey aren't even, like, close to what you'd expect, so.
I mean, it feels like it's you know, when they say it's a vehicle, like it was a Margot Robbie vehicle for her to run around as Harley Quinn and do crazy stuff on screen for 2 hours and try to sell some tickets. But yeah.
Well, I don't know about that. I think that she really wanted to make this movie because, like, think about it. Suicide Squad came out 4 years ago and it didn't have a great buzz. The only thing that people really enjoyed about it was her. So from what you read, like, she fought to make this movie. Which is a shame because she really wanted it, and it didn't seem like anybody else really did.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's a shame.
But, again, the reviewers that I've listened to on YouTube, they all say she did a good job.
Yeah, I just don't think the market wanted it. I think that's the issue. The market was just kind of like, eh, we didn't like... I think it's the taint, like you said. Like, nobody liked Suicide Squad. So why are we watching the sequel, which is what this is, the sequel to Suicide Squad.
That is true. You know what? I guess we're going to have to keep our eyes on this and see if any kind of buzz starts to grow and maybe it gets a second life.
I don't know. I might go see it next weekend just to see.
Yeah, I'll probably check it out at some point when I get some time.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance. I was going to go to the movies this weekend, but to see Sonic. And I didn't get a chance to do that, so.
That's right, Sonic's out. Oh my god.
I totally forgot that was out.
Yeah, I wonder how many other people did too.
Now, I mean, let's be honest. Movies that are released the first weekend in February aren't usually, you know, huge audience getters anyway.
No, so you release, it's when you take out everything else, you know? Usually the stuff people start believing in comes out in March.
Sonic opens on February 14th.
Oh, sweet. Oh, okay. Comes out this week.
All right, good. Yeah. Oh, good. Then I will go this weekend.
And Fantasy Island comes out on the same day.
Dude, they made that a horror movie.
How can you know, right?
About this? Like, they took they ripped the idea right off of the Banana Splits.
Yeah, which is another one.
And they added Saw to it, apparently, or something.
Yeah. Like. It's like, I know Tattoo was creepy, and Ricardo Montalban had a weird little, yeah, I can see the guy having a serial killer thing to him, but it's a little much.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get it. I don't know why. I mean, I guess it's, Blumhouse is kind of looking for properties no one really cares about.
That's what Blumhouse does. They crank out, not bad, they actually do a pretty good job with their horror films, but they crank them out.
Well, I look forward to seeing Witchy Poo try to murder a bunch of teenagers. And Sigmund the Sea Monster.
I don't even get that. What
Croft,
is it?
Croft puppets. The.
Oh, that's not H&R. You can watch that. That's available. Oh, okay, I thought you meant the Banana Splits. That is available. That's on demand if you want to watch that. I don't want to watch it, but it's available.
But but that all comes from the same era.
The Sid and Marty Croft stuff, right?
Yep.
Yeah. The Bugaloos. Yeah.
Oh my god. The Bugaloos horror movie.
Outer space or something? I forget. The one with the two weird robot people? There were a whole bunch of them.
There
you guys are making me feel so good. Like, I'm feeling old, but then I listen to you guys talk, and I'm like, oh, I'm not this old.
Nope. Thanks, man.
Hey, touche, my friend, touche.
But this is the well that people are dipping into to make movies now, apparently. I mean, geez.
So what other properties from the 70s could make a good horror film?
There was let's see, Electro Woman and Dino Girl, if they want to do superhero movies.
Yeah.
That was a live action.
I don't know.
That seems like that fit pornography better than horror.
Well, it was the 70s on Saturday morning cartoons live action, so.
What? Knight Rider, but instead of Kit, it's Christine.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. There was one. There was a Monster Squad back then, but it wasn't the movie.
That was in
the Monster Squad. It was the Monster Squad back then it was weird. It was live action Saturday morning cartoon 70s thing.
Oh, I didn't even know about that.
So there was...
Oh, you have to look it up. Look it up on YouTube. Look, Monster Squad, but not the movie from, what, 10, 15 years ago?
Like 30. Yeah. The 80s.
Was it 30? Holy crap.
The other Ghostbuster.
Yes.
No.
With the monkey?
Yeah.
Yes.
That was a horror. That already was a horror show. That's why they had to name the other cartoon The Real Ghostbusters.
That is.
Oh my goodness.
True story.
Three's Company.
Oh yeah, that would work.
Jack actually is killing the women.
Jack is essentially H.H. Holmes. Yes, that would work.
Okay, I got one that neither one of you. I got one that neither one of you have heard of.
Oh, that won't be fun.
Marlowe and the Magic Movie Machine.
The hell are you talking about?
What are you smoking?
Hey, this is what I get for getting up 5 a.m. every morning and planning out every Saturday morning cartoon drive for like the entire 70s.
Oh, Sheriff Lobo, but he's actually a werewolf.
Oh God. No, worse yet, Sheriff Lobo, but he's a Zarnian.
All right. I think I smell another social media madness poll coming on here.
I agree.
What 70s series should be rebooted as a horror movie?
Yeah. Oh, crap.
Tag Blumhouse in that one, because we're ready to give him an idea.
Anything is open. Doesn't matter.
Well, we have to pick four for the poll. What about The Love Boat? Well,
that's essentially the same thing as Fantasy.
Yeah. Yeah, which essentially were just guest star vehicles on TV.
Right.
Yep. All right. The Carol Burnett Show.
That's funny. Well, seriously, you guys lived in the 70s. I didn't. What other, the Jeffersons?
Oh, One Day at a Time.
All in the Family?
All in the Family. Oh, God's All in the Family. Engine 51, Chips. Or maybe not. Chips might have been it too.
They rebooted Chips already.
Oh. There you go. MASH.
Huh.
MASH is a horror film.
Yeah. Think about it.
There's something there.
They pretty much ended it with, what's his face being crazy.
Right. Make it all a crazy, idea in Hawkeye's mind.
Yep.
And make it even more gory and disgusting and some of the, Dead come back that he worked on.
So Sanford and Son is not far off from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
It's not?
When you think about it, they live in the junkyard. Like the Texas Chainsaw family lived in that little house.
Oh,
like there's
he was always claiming he was gonna have a heart attack. Maybe every time he claims that he goes back and grabs somebody's heart.
Right, or he talks about his dead wife.
Yep.
Oh my God, he actually killed his wife.
Yeah, there you go. Sanford and Son is a horror film.
Oh, man.
So we've got two. We need two more.
Well, and I still think Three's Company.
Okay, yeah, Three's. We got Three's Company. I like that one, by the way. That could be horrifying. Now I need one more.
Shelly and the Pussycats in Outer Space.
That's not horror. That's science fiction.
Well, unless I saw it. Alien. It was definitely horror.
Oh, that was a thing? That was really a thing?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No,
the original Shazam Isis Hour was then, too.
That's true.
And Speed Buggy. Speed Buggy. There's your Christine.
There's your Christine.
Oh, Scooby-Doo.
Scooby-Doo's all...
Yeah, but, I mean, Scooby-Doo...
Super Buggy was another one, but I think that was another Sid and Marty Croft.
I was going to say, Scooby-Doo is still around, though. Like, so it'd be hard to...
True.
To get that right. But Super Buggy fits into the Christine thing. Oh my God, that's not a bad idea.
How many people do you think we've lost by now?
They're still listening. They like what we do.
Yes.
No, I've got the perfect one. Land of the Lost.
Oh!
Sleestaks, come on.
That would work.
As horror? Yes. It'd be like Carnosaur.
All right, I think...
Oh God, no, was it? What's the priest dinosaur?
Oh, it's been so long. I don't remember the character names.
No, it's a new movie.
Oh,
we talked about
the Velocipaster. That's right. Velocipaster.
I did see that.
All right. I think we got our poll for the week. All right. Well, moving on from that.
How do you move on from that?
I don't know. I apologize in advance to Lou, but John and I did do an interview this week. We recorded earlier, and we're including it in this week's episode. And it's Lou Mogan. You may not know his name, but he is a writer that worked for many different fanzines in the 80s. He was one of the first people to write. He wrote the Marvel Index back in the 80s, and then sold a Inhuman story back in the 80s and started writing comics shortly after that. So it was a fun interview because he's somebody that was a fan that worked his way up and became a writer in the business. So
love those stories.
Yeah. So without further ado, here is Lou, and we'll see you on the other side.
All right, boys and girls, this again is your host, Dave, and I'm here with John. Say hello, John.
Hello, John.
And we are talking with, this is maybe something I should have asked before we started. I don't know if you want to be called a comic book historian, a comic book writer, or all of the above. But we
all
are
the
here
above
with...
would do just fine. Yeah, okay. Go ahead.
We are here with Lou Mogan. How are you doing, sir?
Pretty darn good. How are you there, David?
I'm doing really good. So when Rick offered this opportunity, I jumped on it because I'm kind of interested in your past and how you got started. Because it's to me it's very interesting, and I think to a lot of fans it probably is. Obviously you collect it from a young age, correct? But then.
Oh, yeah, like that. I was probably about four when my mom corrupted me with a copy of Mouse Musketeers that was back in 1958, and I have never looked back since then. Go
cool.
Ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. Eventually you became a fan. You wrote for a fan magazine.
All right, from tons of them like that. In the 80s, I had a big run there. Started out with, I think, the Comic Reader. I did Backseat Superheroes from them, covering all the non-Marvel and DC heroes of the mid-60s. And I had a thing in a zine called Lock, which was done by Richard Howell. And you probably know about him from a lot of other projects right now. And it was about, it was called God and Man in Comics. It was talking about how comics covered, God and or gods and their stuff and such like that. Then I went on to a whole bunch of others, including Amazing Heroes and such like that. So
right.
And so I spent most of the rest of the decade there. Yeah.
I do remember Amazing Heroes.
Oh, yeah. It was a good team.
Yeah. So was that your goal when you started out to be a writer for fan magazines, or was it
My goal when I started out was always to be a writer for comics, but, there was some interference in there, as everybody else does. So, what I did was I did a few, I think I started out either with the plots for a trilogy of Heap stories in Airboy, Chuck Dixon's run for Eclipse, an Inhuman series that I wrote for Mark Gruenwald, like that, which got published a long time after I wrote it, and it got illustrated like that. But that was the Inhuman special, like that. So those were my two first things I did, like that. And after that, it got to be, well, I'll be lucky if I get something in print, in comics each year or something like
right.
that. But that's where it goes when you're not in New York or something like that. So go ahead.
Yeah, that's true. So you wrote a lot of the history type books, Index, Marvel Index. How did you get those projects? How did that come about?
Oh, it's not too hard. Way back in 1976, when I was still, a raging fanboy for Marvel, I wrote George Olszewski with some corrections for his books and such like that. And he was nice enough to write me a letter back, and we got into correspondence on that stuff and eventually started giving me the raw copies of his, raw copies of data so I could hopefully correct it and such like that. And I ended up, staying over at his house whenever we went to the San Diego Comic Con, because he lived in San Diego back then. And he may still, as far as I know, So I was a correctionist on that. And the way the Backseat Superhero started out was I was going to write those things for his zine, which was Collector's Dream back then. But that thing pretty much died after issue number 5, and I just waited and waited and waited for about a year or so, and then I asked them for the articles back, and I pitched them to the comic reader, and boom, you know, they apparently struck a chord with folks there, and right after that, you know, they started... in comics, they started reviving the Thunder Agents from Tower and, you know, the ML, not the MLJ heroes so much as the Mighty Heroes, you know, and Archie and, you know, whatever else. And that kind of Charlton, you know, the Charlton Heroes were picked up by DC around that time. Everybody all the way down to Magic Man, known as was in Herbie, started getting revived like that if they could get their hands on it. So they had an effect on the you know, industry and all that kind of stuff. So that's the way that thing went. And I'd be surprised if this one doesn't have an effect on the industry too. So big deal.
Yeah. So I'm kind of curious too. How do people react when you tell them you're a comic book historian?
Well, I don't tell too many people I'm a comic book historian, but
okay.
I think the people inside the industry, quote unquote, you know, recognize my name and know what I've done and all that kind of good stuff. So they, you know, so they do have a leg up on that. If I pitch somebody a writing project, they probably know me from, you know, all the stuff I did for Amazing Heroes and Comics Interview and stuff like that. So yeah, that sometimes is an advantage there. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, because it's also becoming more, I think it's becoming more recognized as a piece of American history and a true art form. Do you ever get asked to speak at any, like, because there's colleges that teach courses on this now. Do you ever get
asked? Yeah, some of them do. Not per se so much, but, you know, the reason why it's become accepted now as a piece of Americana, besides the fact that, you know, have blockbuster movies all over the place with superheroes and also a batch of TV shows adapted from DC and Marvel, is that my generation, which was the first one to, you know, really... what can I say, you know, legitimize comics, you know, realize that, hey, this is kind of neat stuff. And all that kind of stuff. Back in the 1960s, you know, we grew up and some of us didn't grow up. We just loved the comic books so we could recognize, you know, the characters so that, you know, hey, you know, if they're putting out, you know, a movie about, what, Superman? Back in 78, we packed the theaters. Same way with Batman in the 80s. And then the Marvel movies, you know, the current crop starting with Iron Man and such like that. And the TV shows and various things like that, which are based on comic books, you know. It made enough money to where the folks who are handling entertainment would realize, hey, you know, this is a viable genre. People will spend money on it. So, you know, that's the reason why we have it right now. It's as big as Westerns used to be in the 50s, like that. So we'll see where it goes. But, yeah, that's the reason why, mainly because people love it. Now, you know, my generation loves it and still loves it as far as I know, like that.
Yeah, it's funny. You sound like us when we talk about that on the show all the time about how it's become such a big thing, but, you know, will it go the way of the Western, you know, eventually and die out?
It might. Yeah, like that. At least a phase of it might die out. You know, I don't doubt it, but once sometime, you know, probably in the next 10, 20 years, you know, the superhero genre will die down, maybe not die out.
Right.
In movies, just the same way the spy genre died out in the late 60s, like that. But, you know, I think they'll still be around. You know, comic books, superheroes and such will still be around in some form because we love them too much and there's too much money to be made from them one way or the other. Okay.
Yeah, that's true.
Just it.
Go ahead. Money is the driver of all things, but nostalgia and love are other drivers on them. So, you know, so go ahead.
Yeah, I got a question for you. So you've coming out this, you've got is it a new book, Secondary Superheroes?
Yeah, that's it. Secondary Superheroes, a Golden Age Comics.
So you seem to like, well, I mean, we refer to you as comic historian, but I mean, you've been around enough to have seen a lot of the history of comics, a lot of the back of stuff. And this is a book about heroes that most people don't know about. Like they've been shown in one or two issues, but like Catman, I think it mentioned Blue Beetle too, who actually became larger later.
Yeah.
But can you tell us a little bit about how this came about?
Sure, I can. Like that. Well, essentially, you know, I loved Golden Age characters for a long, long time. When I was a kid in '63, the first year I started buying superhero comics, you know, the first two issues of Justice League of America I got were 20, 22, and 21 in that order. And, of course, those were the first issues that crossed over with the Justice Society of America. So, you know, that was I started realizing, hey, there was a whole bunch of heroes, you know, before the current ones. And, of course, Captain America came back in Marvel. You know, first was a trial in Strange Tales and Human Torch Story around that time. And then, you know, the next year they made him an Avenger. You know, boom. So, you know, they started letting you know, hey, there was a Golden Age of comics. You know, there were heroes before this generation and all this stuff. I thought that was cool. You know, I had to learn more about them. But the thing was, you could only learn so much about them because we did not have access to 1940s comic books back then. You know, you just couldn't get them. You know, they were not, they were very rare at that time. You know, we didn't have them, you know, like these big reprints of, you know, chronological reprints of Batman and Superman and Captain America and all the rest of those that they have done, you know, like that. They wring more money out of those things than anything nowadays. We got, you know, books, hardcover books that reprint, you know, old Harvey horror stories or some other, you know, brands which are really off-brand, you know, horror stories like that. Not saying Harvey is an off-brand, but, you know, those other ones were. And, you know, the thing is that money can be made from that stuff, but the thing is we didn't have any of that back then. If you wanted to know about Golden Age heroes, you had to buy fanzines. You had to find out, one, where, you know, fanzines existed. You know, hopefully you found that out of, you know, a letter column in Justice League or something like that, that Julie Schwartz would, you know, say, hey, here's a plug for the Rockets Blast comic collector or something like that. And zines like that would have articles about the 1940s characters like that. And they were written usually by folks maybe a generation older than me, you know, like that, who had been around in the 1940s, you know, to see all that stuff and listen to the radio shows and watch the serials and such like that. And they would put down their knowledge, say, okay, here's a history of the Human Torch, you know, the original ones from 1939, and, you know, give you all the details on that, what issues he was in and all that kind of, good stuff. And And Raymond Keltner, I recall, did a series of articles on the MLJ heroes, which are pretty nice. And then, let's see, they would then, towards the end of the 60s, there started to be some formal histories of comics like that, or informal, if you wish. First one, of course, was probably Jules Pfeiffer's Great Comic Book Heroes, you know, where he, you know, gave his impression of being a young comic book writer in there and what it was like in the 1940s, you know, and all that kind of good stuff. He wrote The Spirit back then, and he reprinted a whole bunch of Golden Age stories, you know, in the back of that thing. That was what everybody went for. And then, about 4 years after that, you know, Jim Steranko came out with his two-volume History of Comics, which was monumental there. You know, he did DC and Marvel, which was timely back then, in the first volume. And he did Fawcett and Quality and a few other things, such as Flying Heroes and a couple of other things in the second volume, which was much bigger. And that was back, I think, around 1972. And, you know, this was even before they revived Captain Marvel, for crying out loud. And then, you know, we were waiting for the third one because he had written in his comic scene fanzine that, or magazine, whatever you want to call it. Anyways, he wrote a whole schedule of volumes that would follow up, you know, on this one. The next one was going to be all the remaining Golden Age heroes, and the next one was going to be 1950s stuff, you know, like EC and Westerns and various other things like that, and the 50s heroes. And then, boom, the one after that was going to be the 60s, and then he said other volumes would continue on into the 70s, and it really wasn't very far into the 70s there, so we were just going, yeah, gimme. And we kept waiting. Yeah, like that. And the bit was that we had very many good comic book histories, you know, in that time. We had, you know, Jerry Jones's book, you know, about Silver Age heroes, and he also did one, you know, Men of Tomorrow, examining, you know, people like Siegel and Schuster. There we go. Quite a bit of difference there. And Bill Finger and Bob Kane and all the rest of those guys, you know, where they came from. And we also had Mike Benton doing his volumes of comic book history. I enjoyed those quite a bit. But we really never had a book that treated all the other heroes that weren't published by, you know, DC or Marvel or Fawcett or Quality, you know, in the same method that Steranko did, which was, you know, in-depth coverage of the heroes. And, you know, I even asked Jim a couple of times, you know, I say, Jim, you know, let me help you, you know, write the history, but, you know, never got around to it like that. So, you know, and if he did the third volume right now, I'd be the first one to grab it, you know, like that. But since he didn't, I says, well, you know, so if it's going to get done, I guess I'm going to have to do it. So that's why I did it. And that's what ended up being this one, Secondary Superheroes of Golden Age Comics, where we treat everybody from, you know, every other company that was not treated, you know, in those two books like that, including the Marvelous Super Snipe like that. So, you know, that's what we're working with here. And so far, everybody that's bought it seems to like it, at least according to the reviews I've gotten. So there you go.
Dick, was there a favorite hero in there that you covered? One that you think should have gotten more? I mean, like, these days, we're seeing a resurgence of heroes that were usually buried under, like, Vibe is back, you know, because of the CW shows.
Oh my gosh.
You've got the Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, what one did you like?
Well, the one I'd love to see somebody reprint, and it won't get done unless Condé Nast does it, because I got the rights to it, is, of all things, Super Snipe. And that's something you've probably never heard of. That was put out by Street and Smith, who was the guys that put out The Shadow and Doc Savage way back when. And Super Snipe was a satirical kind of superhero. He was, well, basically, he was just a little kid, you know, that, and he had the biggest, they called him the boy with most comic books in America. And they'd often give you a view of his bedroom, which was just stacked over and over and over with comics. And his name was Copy McFadd. And whenever danger threatened, or at least a perceived danger, something like that, he would jump into his I think it was his granddad's old union suit of red underwear and his dad's blue lodge cape and a domino mask, and he'd go out there and, you know, fight whatever evil there was, although it usually wasn't what he was expecting. You know, he's heard of he said something like an antipasto, and he says, oh my gosh, they must be, you know, they must have it, the government must have an antipasto gun or something like that, or they heard about the Japanese beetles or something like that. Oh my gosh, they, you know. And so the German measles, you know, and he usually ended up, you know, having to eat dinner standing up, you know, after that. But the stuff, it was incredibly well written, fun written, and well drawn, you know, by George Marcoux, who you probably never heard of, but he was as good as, say, Bob Bowling on Little Archie and any one of those things. So those things were definitely worth reprinting. And if, you know, Condé Nast, which owns the rights to him right now, or decides to do that, you know, and hardcore volumes, or, I mean, not hardcore, hardcover volumes, I'm pretty sure they'll have a hit on their hands like that. And, of course, there was a lot of other characters I loved in there. I revived four of them for a book we call Fox Force, like that. It's out through Lucky Comics, plug, you know, like that. And it's kind of a version of the Invaders, with Fox heroes, you know, Yarko, Samson, and Flame and a couple of others like that, and they fit together really well. It's a lot of fun there, like that. We just got finished doing the fifth issue, which is the origin of Yarko. He's a magician, and he hasn't had an origin since 1939, so we thought it was about time he got one. And big deal, that thing. So, yeah, there's a lot of fun. The thing is, though, with revivals, you know, most of these guys are in public domain now, and that means just about anybody can get their hands on them, and most of them right now have somebody who's gotten their hands on them and used them, you know, even in a small way. You know, we had that big old Project Superpowers that came out a few years ago from Dynamite. You remember that? Used it just about every able-bodied public domain superhero they could get their hands on. And AC Comics, which did, you know, Femme Force and all that kind of stuff, they revived just a ton of Golden Age characters in their day. And, you know, nowadays online, you know, a lot of people are getting their hands on them and reviving them, such like that. Antarctic has done, I think they've done... Thrilling Comics, and they, that was a title came out from Nador Comics, the Black Terror way back when. They've revived that with some new heroes and some new old heroes, I should say. And you know, there's just tons of outfits getting their hands on Golden Age heroes that are, you know, out of that are in public domain right now, including us. So, you know, everybody's got their own take on them. And some of them are kind of entertaining. So we'll just see what happens with that.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because we actually interviewed someone, I want to say 3 years ago, that was trying to revive Catman.
Yeah, he was gotten, let's see, yeah, he was Man-Cat in Project Superhero. Project Superheroes, that was it. And Catman, they used him, they used the kitten more than Catman in AC Comics. Yeah, Catman is on the cover of Secondary Superheroes along with Voltron, like that, or Voltron, I believe you pronounce his name. And that's a pretty good picture for a cover there, but Catman was fun because he had nine lives, you know, and he gets killed once a story, you know. And they realized, you know, they can't go beyond nine stories if they do that.
Yeah, it's a short run.
Short run, yeah, like that. So they kind of forgot about that and just made him a regular old hero like that. That was fun like that. So, yeah, Catman was fun. Go ahead.
So having been a fan for so long and worked in a lot of different aspects in the industry, I'm kind of curious, do you still read modern comics?
A few of them, but not a heck of a lot. I like Kurt Busiek's work, and I like Mark Waid's work, and, you know, there's a few, you know, that it's more off-on than anything else, guys. You know, let's face it, if you've read 20 years of Iron Man, you know, what do you need to read 20 more years of Iron Man for, you know, like
right.
that? So, yeah, I dropped out of a lot of them around the mid-'80s or so like that, you know, for various reasons, one of which was I was in between jobs then, and I couldn't afford to buy everything in the world, so I just bought the things I wanted. I was surprised to find out how many titles I dropped there. But, you know, I like, you know, say the latest thing that caught my eye was Chuck Dixon's Airboy number 51, which is really fun. It's a continuation of the Eclipse series, and I really like that. And this one that he's just done is just as fun as the original series, and I like that. And of course, you know, I pick up just about anything Neil Gaiman does. And League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, whatever that is, you know, I usually get a hold of that. But, you know, it has to be something really interesting right now, you know. One of the things that gets me right now is that a lot of the folks who write them don't believe in heroes or don't seem to. You know, they just, I don't know, they're pushing them through something, but they seem to lack the heroic spirit. That's what I'm trying to think of, you know, I try to say, you know, that, you know, they really motivated us way back when, you know, Peter Parker would decide he'd had enough of Spider-Man, then he gets a pep talk from his Aunt May, and he goes and rips open a package, he put his old Spidey costume in it, puts it on and says, you know, I'm going to show him, you know, what Spider-Man's really all about, and all that kind of stuff. That was enough to inspire you, and then we're not getting a lot of that right now, and I wonder why, like that, it's just too cynical. Go ahead.
Yeah, and then that's actually the point I was going to say. It seems like the storytelling now is trending more towards introspection and internal conflict or interpersonal conflict. But that idea of the reason why most people that we've talked to love the Wonder Woman movie was not the ending or everything else. It was that one moment where she said, these people need help. And she took off the cloak, got up into no man's land, and just started kicking ass.
That was, it's like
you said, that was inspiring. But it seems like the writing these days, or I guess it's the trend these days, is that it's more like a CW show where it's all conflict and angst and all that, but not the actual drive of wanting to help people.
Right. Although I'll tell you, I like the CW shows a lot better than most of the DC movies and the DC stuff on Disney, you know, like that. It's not on Disney. The DC shows are on what now? I don't remember, like that.
DC Universe.
DC Universe, right, like that. I saw one episode of Doom Patrol and I said, forget it, you know, like that. But, you know, they've lost part of its loss of innocence. You know, part of it is also trying to make the characters kind of too realistic, maybe. I don't know, you know, it's really what it amounts to is the loss of an altruistic spirit, a spirit of willing to help, you know, to, you know, put yourself out there for, you know, the common good. And the thing is, there are two things that have to go together in superhero. Super, you know, which is, you know, above and beyond, just like that, and hero. And if you don't have the heroic element in there, you know, what's the point? What are you writing? You know, like that. So that's why, you know, I think they should go back to a little bit to investigate the possibilities of heroism and doing something because it's right, or maybe because you're the only guy that can do it, you know, like that. So, you know, it was very much in the feeling of World War II, when everybody had, you know, where so many guys had to go out there and fight for democracy and, you know, take down Hitler and all that kind of good stuff. And that's what the cradle of the superheroes really was, like that. So that's also the reason also probably because why they died out about 5 years later, because there was no war for them to, you know, for them to be inspired by all that kind of stuff. So I don't know if I've been too confusing, but you go ahead and take it, okay?
that's actually an excellent point too, because it's I don't know if you saw, there was an article came out not too long ago talking about is Superman still relevant in today's world, and can they write a good Superman story? And
he could be. Go ahead.
Yeah. No. Exactly. Like it's. I kind of felt like that was part of the problem with Man of Steel is. Mm-hmm. They weren't trying to write a movie where you were inspired by this guy doing the right thing. They were trying to bring him down to our level and make him human.
And you can't quite do that. You know, he has links with us, but he has to be a bit above us. You know, he has to be the man we wish we could be, we would want to be. And in reading him, you know, maybe I'd be more inspired, you know, to be better than ourselves, you know, the same way Spider-Man was back in the Leon Ditko things. You know, nothing ever went right for Peter Parker, but he always did the right thing because he knew it was the right thing. Mm. Like that. Yeah. And even though he wouldn't get much reward for it, you had to go back to high school where Flash Thompson the jock would be, you know, king of the hill. And, you know, everybody looked down on puny Parker and such like that. And, you know, go out there and, you know, because he knew, you know, hey, Spider-Man's the only guy can do this, you know, like that. And he did it. You know, and that was inspiring enough to me. You know, so, yeah, I'd say that kind of stuff. You know, when the character acts heroically, then he will inspire you, you know. And that's why I'm so down on the people that try to deconstruct heroes. Now, they're not supposed to be deconstructed, for crying out loud. Make them more realistic, maybe, you know, like that. But, you know, everything doesn't have to be The Watchmen, like that.
I was going to say, The Watchmen was good as a one-shot, but after that it gets old real quick.
Yeah, right. It's the kind of way I felt about Batman after Frank Miller's Dark Knight came out. I loved Frank Miller's Dark Knight as year one. But the thing was, DC immediately thought, well, we got to make everything like Dark Knight. And you don't. You know, it was, they remembered the dark, but they forgot the night. And that was not something to say Denny O'Neill or Steve Englehart would have done. You know, they remembered the humanity of Batman. And, you know, there was a line he would not cross. And he was, you know, he was very heroic at that time. You know, I really loved reading Batman back then. But I kind of lost interest in it, you know, maybe after Bane broke his back and then they put down Bane like that. You know, I'm sure there have been great Batman stories after that, and I've read a few of them, but I don't keep up with them anymore. Like that. Go ahead.
It's kind of funny that you know who really did Batman justice with keeping that balance was Bruce Timm and Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah, that was a good one. That's a goodie like that. Also, I do like Superman now. I don't keep up with him that much, but I'm usually interested or entertained, I should say, when I get a Superman book because, you know, you really can't dark him up very much. If you did, it would be a mistake like that. So, you know,
he's a good guy.
Go ahead. Zack Snyder, forget that. Yeah, we're all trying to forget that. Batman and Superman, you know, like that, you know. And maybe they'll do Superman good in the movies again, but, you know, it hasn't been for a long time. You know, I was one of the few guys that liked that, it was a Superman reboot they did way back when, in the early 2000s or so,
Returns?
Yeah, Superman Returns. That was not too bad like that. Just step in the right direction. Okay. But it just didn't work, I don't think. And, you know, and you will notice that what with the Batman trilogy they did, you know, with the Dark Knight trilogy, you know, most of that was still pretty heroic on that kind of thing. Now, you know, I didn't like the middle one with the Joker, but I thought the first and the third ones were very good like that. And, you know, they showcased his heroic qualities quite a bit, I thought, like that. So those are some of the classic superhero movies. They don't know how to do them anymore. At least DC doesn't, but Marvel does. And, you know, whatever they hooked into, you know, they realized, you know, that it has to be entertaining, it has to be uplifting to a large degree, and they have been, you know. We've enjoyed just about all of the Marvel movies right now, so, you know, there goes. Maybe DC will catch on one of these days, I don't know.
Maybe.
No.
what can I say?
Earlier you had alluded to your Inhumans story that you had written and that it got published many years after you originally wrote it. Can I ask how long it was between that?
Oh, gee, like that. Let's see. I don't know. I went to San Diego. You know, I told folks about it the first year I went to San Diego. I probably would have been around the late 80s, something like that, I don't know, or mid-80s, I don't know. Yeah, it was mid-80s, probably before the crisis by a couple of years, and then it got published, I guess, in the late 80s, so there were several years in between there. It was supposed to show up in the middle of What If, when What If was doing about three stories an issue.
Okay.
And then they decided, well, What If is just going to be one story an issue, so boom, there we were. And Rich Howell and I had done about five episodes, and, you know, they didn't have a place, so it was one of those great unpublished Marvel things until Vince Coletta decided he wanted to ink it, and that was when it got transformed into a one-shot comic like that, you know. Then I did get to do the Swordsman origin in Avengers Spotlight, which was one of my fave stories like that, and hooked up with Dennis Maloney to do a few things for Heroic, including the Spark Plug mini and some issues of League of Champions and a few Flare stories and such like that, you know. But and I had a lot of fun with that, especially working with Henry Martinez. But you know, that's kind of where it started. Go ahead.
So having been a fan for as long as you were, how did it feel when you got your first comic book story published?
Incredible, like that, you know. I'll tell you, the thing is, the real rush you get is when the thing is accepted, you know, like that. They're going, oh, man, they're going to let me do this, you know. And then, you know, you see the art and you're just flushed with that kind of stuff. If it's Marvel, you have to write the dialogue after you see the art. But the thing was that, you know, and then I talked to Mark Waid about this. We used to be tight way back when. And then you see, finally see the thing out on the stands. And it's kind of, you know, that's good, but eh, like that. Not as fun. He said, yeah, you're right. You know, it's always kind of a letdown when you see it on the stands. But wasn't the case with secondary superheroes. Really loved that thing. But, you know, yeah, getting to actually have a hand in the process is really a marvelous thing, you know. And one of the things they don't tell you about, one of the other benefits you get is getting to make friends with the artists and other people you work with. And that's really great. You know, I made quite a few friends there. And, you know, I will continue to do that like that. So big deal on this kind of thing. And I don't know if I should plug the other stuff I'm doing right now or not.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask, so what other things do you have coming out right now?
And where can they find
you? Yeah, okay. I'm working on a sequel I'm pitching to McFarland, supposedly called Action Heroes of Comics, of Golden Age Comics, and that's going to cover this stuff like Fiction House and others. It's going to be divided more into, you know, thematic categories. First one's going to be Jungle Heroes. Second one is going to be Science Fiction. Third one's going to be The Adventurers, ones that don't quite fit into other things. And I believe the fourth one is probably going to be Western heroes, you know, the ones in the 1940s and like that. So that's probably what's going to make up the second book. I'm pitching that. Okay. And as far as comic books go, I've got a lot of stuff going, mostly microbrews, but I'm also working for Warrant, which does the Creeps magazine. You know, that's out on, you know, it's kind of a faux Warren magazine.
Right.
And it's out on stuff like Barnes & Noble. Okay, so I write semi-regularly for the Creeps, and I've gotten, you know, arted by a whole bunch of great artists there. And I got a story coming out in the first issue, I think, of Vampiress Carmilla, which is their trib to Vampirella. That's, I think, going to come out later this year. Let me see here. Okay. For Lucky Comics, which is in my favorite place, okay, that's where we do Fox Force, which is the World War II team of Fox Heroes there. I'm also doing a short revival of Blue Bolt, you know, like that, that takes place after 1949, and we find out what happens to old Blue Bolt, you know, when he gets his powers back and his costume back and gets into conflict with the Green Sorceress and all that. And I've also written a few stories of the Black Bat, which is a pulp magazine hero they had way back when. He kind of predated Batman by a little bit, you know, but he's a public domain character right now, and he was a lot of fun to write. You know, I wrote him kind of like a early 70s, you know, Batman character. You know, I can imagine Irv Novik drawing these stories or something like that. And then we got, yeah, oh, sorry about that. And then I've got a Barbarian novel, believe it or not, coming out from Lucky. It's about a character called Crom, who was created by Gardner Fox for Avon Comics back in the 50s. It's called Crom the Zaltus War, and that thing maybe will be out later this month, like that, so be looking for it. Let me see here. For Indelible, which is a group that, you know, takes a lot of the public domain characters from Dell Comics, let me see. I'm done a couple of things for a thing called Popcom. I revived a character called Spaceman for them. And I also did, we also, with Andy McPhee, a great artist there, revived a couple of characters called Dunk and Lou, who are, you know, Dunk and Lou, who are probably a couple of urban Archies. If you can imagine Archie living in New York City, that's them. They were a lot of fun to work with, and he did an excellent job on it. And I got one of the string of horror stories coming out in a book called House of Spades, which hopefully will be out any day now. And I did a little prose story of Professor Supermind and Son, or Father and Son characters from superheroes from Dell, in a book called Indeliprose. Okay, and we're working on a thing called Neutral Special, which will be teaming up all the 60s Dell characters, you know, Dell heroes, you know, like Nukla and the Fab Four and Frankenstein, Dracula and Werewolf and stuff like that, you know, up against Neutro, who's this giant robot sent to conquer the Earth, like that. All comes from the 1960s, and we're having a lot of fun with that one. And let me see, for Source Point, we're doing a satire comic, which we hope to have delivered to them by the end of the month, like that. And then for Pro-C, I've done a Frankenstein novel, believe it or not, called Monster in the Mansions. You can find it on Amazon if you want. And I've written the second in the series, which hopefully is going to be published later this year. I'm working on the third of it. And they take up right from where Mary Shelley's novel ends. And, you know, we continue with that. The stories are told in first person by Frankenstein himself. Okay. And the last thing I can think of is upcoming prose book we've got coming out from Airship 21, I believe it is. And it's called Joe the Detective Computer. And he's a hard-boiled detective computer, and he, you know, he's solves cases in cyberspace and goes up against, you know, villains and such like that. And I had a heck of a lot of fun writing that one, so I think you're going to have a lot of fun reading it when it comes out. And I think that covers most of what I've been up to lately.
This segment brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Drink a few gallons, you might be able to keep up with Lou.
I was going to say, you like to work.
I do like that. I'm always writing on that kind of thing. So if I'm not writing, I'm reading, you know, researching for something like that. So that's the way it goes. And I'm going to keep it up until I'm no longer here, which I hope is not for the near future there. Okay.
Yeah, okay. So since you like to work so much, that's a good lead into the question we normally like to end on, which is, how do you measure success?
Oh, geez, I guess you measure success by having the things published like that, you know, so somebody likes it well enough to accept it. You know, I've thought about self-publishing, you know, sometimes, and I may do it in the future. I've got some short stories running around which are not collected yet. But the bit is, if you can submit something to somebody, you know, and they say, okay, we like this well enough, we'll go with it, then, you know, that's really the pleasurable thing of it. You know, say, you know, okay, this is, you know, they have judged this professional caliber. And, you know, that's something you can show to the folks, say, hey, you know, I have something done here. You know, about being arrogant, but being proud of it, you know, like that. And that's why I'm proud of what's happened for the last few years here when I really started hustling. It's had some effect. And it's gotten some results, and that's the best thing about being a writer, you know, when you can actually get stuff out there and have people read it and have them like it, like that, or even not like it, whatever, like that. So that's the pleasure I get of it, and that's why I keep on going, because I couldn't stop going, really. Yeah.
That's a good answer. Okay. And then finally, just to wrap it up, where can people find you online and find more about your work?
Oh, geez, I'm on Facebook on this kind of thing, but really, try Amazon, you know, look under my name, Lou Mugin, and you'll see a lot of the stuff that I've done that's still available, you know, so that's an easy way to do it. And I just updated it with a thing on secondary superheroes, and of course, folks out there, if you read something of mine, you like it, even if you don't like it, you know, leave me a review on Amazon, I'd really love it, that kind of thing, that's how it goes, okay?
Cool, all right.
All right. Thanks much on this, guys.
No, thank you for your time.
Yep, thanks.
Yeah, okay. Our time is your time, like that. And everybody buy Secondary Superheroes of Golden Age Comics if you can scrape up the money, okay? And thanks very much for having me, guys.
Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, we're back. So I think we're getting to the end, guys. We're gonna close up. Thanks, Lou, for doing the interview. But you guys have any recommendations for our audience for this week?
Yeah, I just started. I don't know why I slept on these books for so long, but I just started reading The Dark Towers. I'm actually listening because my time is dead. I don't have time to read as I'd like to between writing and driving and coaching and all that stuff.
Right.
So I'm doing audiobooks of the Dark Tower series. And I finished The Gunslinger, and I just started drawing of the three today. And, man, these are good. I'm mad that I slept on them for so long.
Cool.
I'm quite enjoying it.
How about you, John?
Well, I just started a book series because I'm like hitting the bottom of the barrel now, and I'm just picking random authors, and I found a book series that was, let me look it up here. Oops. So it's an author named B.R. Kingsolver. And it's a series about mages and stuff, and it's actually pretty good. So that's it. As far as anime goes, there's very, very little going on. That, you know, there's really nothing new that I can suggest. Unfortunately for JD, he won't get his.
No fun.
Always bummed.
No, there's really, I mean, nothing that I'm, there's no, nothing new. It's kind of sad, actually, you know?
Cool. We missed a news article, but we'll talk about it next week. I'm sorry, John. I will recommend people go to superheroespeak.com, because we've got actually a lot of reviews that have gone up in the past week, and we've got plenty more coming. Don or D Squared, as our fans know him better, just wrote some three, great reviews, all for Valiant Books. We had, The Visitor number one, Quantum and Woody number one, and Psylords number eight. Comic book reviews are up there, so check those out. There's more to come. And you should be checking out the books from Valiant while you're at it. They've got a lot of great books, and they got a movie coming out this year, guys, Bloodshot. So if you aren't familiar with the book, make sure you check it out. All right. On that note, boys and girls, we're going to put a pin in it for the week. So as always, thanks for listening. Don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week.
After the
we'll be right back.
All right. I believe I'm going to use that one this week. See, John doesn't listen to the show, so he doesn't know.
But we actually do that.
That actually is in there.
Part of the show.
Yes.